This is Christoph Kisun, and you're listening to Navigating Diversity, where we explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. Our intention at Navigating Diversity is to have open, honest, and informed conversations that can help people navigate some of the most important issues of diversity we're facing globally today, but in a way that isn't afraid to ask some of the big questions, the big, sometimes heavy questions that can bring some of the light and hope into the conversation and help give this and all our lives meaning. At Navigating Diversity, we emphasize three core values. First, recognizing the duality in all things, holding space for both the light and the dark, our differences and our similarities, the things that scare us and the things that make us feel whole, for neither can exist without the other. Second, vulnerability, finding more conscious ways to stand in our truth and help others to stand in theirs, and to share our stories and the most authentic parts of ourselves with the rest of humanity as the only way to heal the world. And third, perhaps our most important value, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. It's the only way for us to grow and to do better. Navigating Diversity airs on Tuesday nights at 7:30 p.m. on KISU, and you can catch all our conversations at kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity. You can also find us on Facebook. Simply search the handle at Diversity Radio. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Dr. Olivia Gonjui, licensed professional counselor, rising counseling educator, and cross-cultural relations enthusiast. Hi, Olivia.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. So thank you for being here.
Of course.
And I think a good place for us to start is your story.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about where you're from. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your childhood, what it was like, a little bit about your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was born and raised in Southeast Washington, D.C. My dad is actually from Cameroon. My mother is from D.C. She has Native African American and white descent.
Wow.
My oldest brother, he actually did genealogy for her, and we were able to find that out. So I grew up, I went to DC public schools.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm pretty proud of that. I went to Patricia Roberts Harris Educational Center.
Mm.
The school is now since has been turned into a place for development of nurses and things of that nature through DC government. But I went to that school from kindergarten to eighth grade. And then I would later go to Benjamin Banneker Academic High School. Across town in Northwest. Yeah.
Was that a shift?
Yes, yeah. It was. Southeast typically gets the bad rep. I wonder sometimes if it's steered to happen that way, because a lot of beautiful things actually started in Southeast DC. So Southeast is the quadrant that holds or held the first black neighborhood in the whole city.
Wow.
Yeah. The neighborhood is actually where part of my family is from. It's called Berry Farms. To my understanding, Southeast also is the home of one of the first black churches as well.
Wow.
So many big things come from this area.
That you just won the lottery of being a part of.
I won the lottery. I'm pretty proud to be from Southeast DC. I know that we have a lot of different things happening, so there will continue to be a struggle anywhere. But I have been paying attention to the way that the media steers our area as far as like different news segments and things of that nature.
Do you think the media coverage is more negative than positive? Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So that's what gives Southeast a bad rep. There's continued coverage of different things happening within the area and people get in their head like, oh my gosh, I don't want to live there, or I don't want to go there. But it's some things that happen where it's maybe even a purposeful intention to kind of take this mecca
of like black culture and history and black power.
Yes, to take it down. I noticed in working in other areas in DC that the coverage of the different things that take place as far as crime, it doesn't make the media. It won't make the media if not. And this is someone who's born and raised in the area around this time, happily in my 30s. So I can speak from a longitudinal observance, you know. This isn't just a 5 minute, I looked and saw this.
You've seen this change over time.
Yes, I've seen the change. I've seen it continue to develop. But then I've also seen pretty beautiful things happen too. I grew up pretty covered in mentorship.
Oh, beautiful. Tell me.
Yeah, so I have a mentor, the mentor that I went to her birthday party more recently. She described me as bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Hey.
So I was very excited about the world and always wondering if the world, if there was more to the world outside of Southeast. Because I had my black doctors. I had my black librarians. I had black store owners and things of that nature. I could go up the street to the Mary Steak and all the cashiers would be black. I could travel with my dad because I have a blended family. So I could travel with my dad and we would go to different parts of DC and I would see more black people in these spaces. And my dad actually has a very diverse network of people. So I was able to see people from India, people from different parts of Africa.
Wow.
You know, and getting to really have black and color at the center. So for me, people laugh when I've come to realization of this. I didn't necessarily interact with a white person until I was 13.
Wow. Like, it's almost the opposite of what most people in Idaho have experienced.
For sure. For sure. So, and I'll never forget when he got enrolled at our school, it was a guy and his sister. And I know all my friends from PR Harris will probably laugh about this, but I remember all of us were like, oh my gosh.
There's some white folk here.
Yeah, there's some white people here. This is so cool. And I remember saying like, oh my gosh, like we're actually talking, we're having a conversation. And mind you, I had been in a space where color and blackness had been
celebrated.
It
was normal.
Normal, right? Where I was in a gifted circumstance where my teachers were making sure that I went to extra events and stuff like that to keep me challenged for K through 8. So I got to go to the Smithsonian and stuff like that. I got to participate in different initiatives outside the city and things like that. But for me, those connections weren't something that were everlasting, right?
Right.
I would only see them for maybe 5 minutes.
You'd have a conversation and move on. There'd be no lasting relationship
or
friendship.
Yeah, so it was always a blur, you know? So like for me at 13, that was a very pivotal marker of like, oh.
There's more out there.
Yeah. So then that prepared me for going to high school where I would travel across the town and take the metro and stuff on my own. And we had a bit more diversity. And I say a bit more because by that time, I was looking around and noticing that, hey, like people that look like they're on MTV actually go to high school with me. Because by that point, I had watched like the old school movies of Casper Meets Wendy. And, you know, I had an array of things that I was watching and listening to as far as music, because in my house we listen from African music to alternative, or one day maybe we'll listen to salsa. And I'm thinking about like being on my dad's side and seeing my dad and my bonus mom like dance and stuff. And then on my mother's side, listening to R&B and rap and still sometimes alternative too. So I grew up in this very mixed cultural atmosphere where I went through a lot of different situations and seeing like different neighborhoods. You know, like I had aunts that lived everywhere in DC. So I spent time in Northwest, I spent time in Northeast, Southeast, Southwest, like I was everywhere. And then with my dad would take me to different places. Like since I was little, there's this there's this auto shop where they were able to see me grow. And they're all Korean. It's a Korean owned auto shop.
They just saw you as little girl Olivia.
They saw me as this little girl. And then now, you know, years later, they'd be like, oh my God, you're old now. So I grew up in a very mixed environment. It would shift and vary. You know, I don't necessarily know that I align with code switching per se.
So how would you define code switching?
Code switching, for me, I say that it's when people go between their usage of language.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times we're ready to call slang, like we're ready to call African American vernacular English slang,
mm-hmm.
when technically that's a language.
Yeah, 100%. It's just like Creole versus standard English in the Caribbean. Creole is a language.
Yeah.
It's not slang. It's not broken English. Mm-hmm. It's not... Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I feel like sometimes that can get weaponized, where it's like, I can't be myself in this space, so let me change this language.
To fit.
Yeah, to fit. But, mm-hmm. I mean, many of us who have grown up speaking another language know that the language needs to fit for the environment, per se. So, my first language growing up was French, but I lived in a house where there were two languages happening.
Hmm.
And I had to go between different family members.
And change up how you spoke.
Yeah, and change up how I spoke. Like, not all of my family on my mother's side speaks French or speaks our dialect.
Mm-hmm.
So having to, like, move between these two situations very carefully, right? Like, to be mindful that just because I know something and you don't know something, it doesn't make you any less than me.
Right.
Yeah. Just respecting and honoring the space.
Amen.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own experiences.
So that's why, like, for me, code switching, sometimes it seems as if it's telling us that our culture doesn't fit.
I like that.
And that bothers me. Yeah.
Yeah, why depart from my culture and how we do things in order to make the rest of the world, to make it easier for the rest of the world to interact with us?
Yeah.
Like, why are they not stepping up on their side and learning my language or, like, getting more comfortable with me and my identity?
Yes.
It has to be a two-way street, right?
Yes. And mm-hmm. that's been something that I've said a lot while in Idaho, where it's like I've heard people tell me that, if you're not from Pocatello, no one will like you because you're a transplant. And it's like, okay. But then also, what about giving people a chance?
Mm.
What about, like, actually immersing yourself in another person's culture? Because when I travel, and just like when I came to Pocatello, I wanted to try all the Pocatello things.
Yeah, me too.
I tried Reed's chocolate milk with the potato flakes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I went to the top of the thing with the pillars.
Yeah,
you know,
Red Hill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, I want to get immersed. I want to see, like... I want to see what's going on. I want to know the ins and outs, and I want to try to make it work for me too.
Absolutely,
you know?
So of course I'm going to put myself into situations where it might be a bit uncomfortable at first, but it's exciting, it's adventurous, and I'm going to try and give something to.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been like a big piece for me that I can see threaded throughout my life, where for me, connecting is being able to say that I get to see a glimpse of your life and I get to be one with you. So in me remembering the things that this space or this area has, it's becoming a part of me.
Amen.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go, everywhere we move, we always keep a part of it with us. It becomes part of our story and it leaves an imprint, it leaves a marker.
Yeah, because for me, since then, I've built multiple homes.
Yes.
You know,
multiple home syndrome. I've thought about this a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's this piece where my home in my high school, like, knowing that no home is perfect, but I know that if I went back to my high school right now to talk to my principal,
you'd be embraced.
Yeah, I'd be embraced. And it's happened. Like, I just, I was president of my graduating class, so we threw an event in our high school gym and was able to work that out. We had recess.
Wow.
And our principal, she was for it. you know?
So beautiful.
Yeah. And then being able to talk to different people that I went to elementary school with, still home, you know, in Richmond. I could go to Richmond right now and I could talk to a lot of different people. And then even in all my jobs that I've had since the age of 14, I can go and talk to people still, because for me, that's connecting. Like, it's not a goodbye, it's a see you later.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. So you grew up steeped, as you said, in Black power.
Mm-hmm.
I love that so much. And it is Black History Month.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm super excited that we get to have this conversation right now.
Yeah.
So what does Black History Month mean to you?
It's the beginning of a hope of inclusion. Carter G. Woodson, it started out as a week, you know, something that wasn't even really acknowledged began as a week. We get to celebrate and honor Black figures. And for me, I expand Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
So in my family, on my father's side, we say that there is Black everywhere.
Mm.
On every continent. So Black for me is celebrating the kings and queens in Africa that I learned in my pro-Black school growing up, K through 8. It's a bit bigger. It's understanding that this world isn't white-centered as we think it is.
Mm.
It's understanding that there's more here. And it's putting us on the forefront. Like, we get to have space where there's some form of acknowledgement that our people have been here. And I've been saying this more recently because it came into awareness for me. I think there can sometimes be a divide in Blackness where some people may not want to say that they identify as Black, and there's this shift. But when I think about the civil rights movement and the different things that have taken place with communities being enslaved, like Black communities being enslaved, you could have traveled to America at any point during that time, Black, African, Jamaican. You could have came into this country and they would have thought you were enslaved too. Black History Month symbolizes power and proclivity of just beauty. Like, a lot of the things that we do, a lot of the things when we walk around in this country, they were thought of by Black people.
I think of a lyric from Damian Marley's Stony Hill album. And he said, thief them knowledge and sell it right back in a college.
Listen.
You stole our texts, our wisdom from Africa and India and Asia. And now I have to come and pay you in your country for a degree in knowledge and wisdom my ancestors discovered, but didn't get any credit for.
Yeah. And then the erasure that happens too, right? Where we're kind of like, not everyone is privy to knowing that our people have done so much for the country. Because when you look in the media, you look at TV,
the representation,
you don't see us.
It's only the thug representation,
the
stereotypical welfare queen.
But imagine people knowing that a Black man invented the light bulb, Louis Latimer.
Exactly.
Imagine,
because he invented the filament that went inside. All Thomas Edison did was make a piece of glass to go around a filament that a Black man designed.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, people aren't privy to knowing these things. And I think it causes some tension when you bring it up, because it's kind of like a fight about knowledge.
Exactly.
And it's like, our knowledge kind of gets discredited. And then, of course, like Damian Marley, like you just said, like, then we're made to kind of look to someone else to tell us who we are. Like, I'm pretty sure that the power in storytelling has been passed down for us for a reason. Because technically, our people weren't allowed to know how to write and read, you know, outside of this country. So,
I mean, when my ancestors left India and signed their indentureship contracts, they couldn't read English. How could they sign a contract in English? And put themselves on a ship and come here and they had no idea what they were signing.
But I wonder, because sometimes I say, is it the only way? So the power of storytelling, knowing that those stories are going to stay with us as long as we tell them. Like, and they don't necessarily need to be written, it's word of mouth.
This is the power of the oral tradition.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, so it's like, I see how literacy helps, but then I also honor the other pieces.
Amen. Yeah. The spoken word.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like I could never forget the stories that my father has told, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sitting there being able to repeat them. And for me, I say, like, my little sister in my family, it seems like her and my younger brother, they tell stories eloquently.
Oh.
To the point where it's like you're laughing so hard and maybe even rolling on the floor. That's something that's been passed down from my father, who will have us laughing so hard at his stories. You know, think about like how well-rounded that is for the power of storytelling. Like it brings so many feelings, stories of triumph, of joy, of struggle.
I think stories shape what we do on a day-to-day basis without us even realizing it. We are more likely to do something if we feel a certain way about it. You can learn as much as you want to learn. You can read as much as you want to read. But unless like your emotions get triggered is when you take action. And that's what stories do. They change the way people feel.
But you know, that's so interesting that you say that. And that's amazing. It's making me think about this piece of how when we consider emotions and affect in this country, they're looked at from a top down. Like you look down at emotions.
Science, rationality, logic, facts, reason, all of that for some reason has more sway over emotion.
With emphasis to make it seem as if those emotions aren't driving you to move, right? Because you have people who say like, I don't want to get too emotional. Don't get too emotional. Don't take it personal. But why are you even moving forward in your endeavors? Those emotions are a part of you, you know?
Amen.
Yeah, so it's like some of those things that I know are passed down within my culture, as dynamic and varied as it is, it's kind of as if like sometimes society tries to discredit it. Like, I'm thankful to be in a field of counseling where I get to move back and forth and to discuss emotions. But imagine people in other fields dealing with this piece of having to ignore a relevant part of themselves.
Or literally half of their brain.
Yes, literally.
Half of their soul, half of their human experience.
Literally, because to be able to say that you're not going to be too emotional, not going to take things personal, then what are you going to do? It's like, are you the Terminator?
Right. Are you like, a robot?
Yeah. Like, just... there's no way. So it's like, I think some things that make me wonder a lot is this piece of discrediting and then pushing to maybe force assimilation to this colder space.
I agree with that. I think it's discrediting stories of the colonized. And the only story that matters is the story of the colonizer, right? Whoever the colonized and colonizer might be in whatever circumstance, because that dynamic has existed since the beginning of time.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So let's just get that clear.
For sure. Yeah.
Even brown people have been colonizers.
Yeah.
And white people have been colonized too.
Yeah.
Right?
Because there's this piece where the system continues. A lot of times we're now talking about like this. After last year, we're talking about this activeness towards wanting to dismantle supremacy.
White supremacy.
But why has it continued? Because there are racially minoritized individuals that will continue to perpetuate the system.
Exactly. It comes from your own. It comes from your own. Yeah, and that's when it hurts the most.
Yeah, that's when it hurts the most for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I think some of that comes from wanting to be something that you're not based on not being able to see who you could be. Right? Like if I grow up and I only see different pictures outside of me, like I see women with straight hair, blue eyes.
Light brown skin.
Light brown skin and everything. Who am I to be in all of this? So that's why like there's like a deep importance to figuring out who you are.
Your story.
Or building your story. Because sometimes you don't know who you are. So you just got to figure it out and add to it. Like, okay, well, let me try this. I think I like this.
Yeah.
I don't like this. and build up who you are.
Right, figure out who you are. Yeah. And I also think it's also building on the story of our ancestors, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody who came before us. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing I try to practice when I do my introspection about my story. Mm-hmm. Always remember your ancestors. Remember how people went from India to Trinidad for you now to be in America. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that stuff is significant. Yeah. And can ground you.
Yeah.
And can give you a base of morals and values, and just it locates you within the world. And then from that location, you can start playing, experimenting, trying new things, interacting, adding things, dropping things. Mm-hmm. But there's this essential foundation that you respect, you know?
Yeah. And I remember, that's funny that you say that. I try to honor my grandparents. I worked at a job where I got to give free books to different schools in DCPS. And I was able to actually work to give books and provide a program to a school that my grandma actually served for years. Hmm. She was a lunch lady. And I was super excited to be in that school. Mind you, I supervised someone who worked in the school. But every time I got to go into that school, the connectedness, you know, and being able to say like, hey, my grandma worked here, you know, and loving every minute of it. And then on my father's side, honoring the fact that my grandma was a strong woman. Mm-hmm. When my grandfather went into exile, she held down the family until he came back.
Hmm.
And then they went back into partnership for sure.
Wow.
But it's like honoring the fact that Black women are amazing.
Oh my God, just... Mm-hmm. Carrying the weight of the world on their backs.
Listen,
every single day they wake up until they go to sleep, and no recognition.
No recognition outside of those stories.
Mm.
Because when you really consider how things are structured, like the structural discrimination practices that are happening that keep us from being able to be accepted for publication.
Mm.
To have our stories featured. It's pretty...
It's game-changing.
Yeah, it's game-changing. And it makes you... Like, for me, it's made me really appreciate the stories that have been told to me. Because when would I ever be able to see a story published about my grandma?
Hmm.
Both of my grandmas. Or both of my grandfathers who now walk with me as I take plight, you know? Because they're gone now to a better place. I think there's just something to say about the way society is structured. And it's going to take more than just talking about it.
Mm.
And it's going to take more of us to be in those different spaces. Because I'll never forget writing some old students that I'd worked with to tell them that, hey, that's why we need you to be in Congress someday. That's why we need you to be a chef.
Yeah.
We need you in this space and in this space and in
this space. Taking up that space and holding that space.
Taking up those spaces, holding those spaces, opening a door.
Amen.
So that someone else can come in and looks like you.
Right, right. Pick your protege and start mentoring them early.
Yeah.
So when you leave, another one of you is going to pop right up.
Yeah. Putting things in place so that, hey, people will know that you left the space better than you found it.
Always. A more inclusive, a more loving, open space.
So that's like something that's really big for me. Just being an awareness of the things that we're up against, but then knowing that the potential for us to do things there beyond what we could even imagine.
I love that. Mm-hmm. This is what the pandemic taught me. It taught me that anything really is possible. Because if you think about it, before the pandemic, our parents and grandparents told us that we had to do X, Y, and Z to be successful, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we followed those rules, we would make it.
Mm-hmm.
The pandemic came in, and even following the equation that they gave us is a bad idea because everything is so up in the air now.
Yeah.
All the traditional pathways we could have taken to success are just as a bad idea as the worst idea we could have ever had, the craziest idea we could have ever had, you know?
Yeah.
So I might as well take off my savings and go to Thailand and live for 4 years, you know, and become a monk.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? How is that any less of a crazy idea than going to Harvard right now or going to college or trying to find some job in some industry that's literally won't exist
Yeah.
In about 10 years.
Because a lot of times we were taught to be conscious of the product that we put out versus
the process.
The process and who we are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like mm-hmm. for me, I've been saying it a lot more recently, but protect your humanity.
Oh, I love that.
You know, like know that even what you work in this job, given this product, you still have to take care of yourself. And for me, I've been tweeting about it. I just started a Twitter for my business. But there's this piece of recognizing that in order for you to do your job, you have to be okay. So being able to say like, okay, I know I have to do these hours, but taking time to actually ground, to read, do something you love, to keep that little flame going,
that little candle.
The quench for life.
Yeah.
Because you can work, but if you're working without that mindfulness and that intention.
Uh-huh. Everything you're doing is white noise.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to place the judgment because that's not what I want to put forth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the hope to encourage that people really take time to figure out what creates that flame and keeps it so that they could go through life living a life well lived. Yeah.
I 100% agree. You do all the choices you make, the things you build, mm-hmm. the kind of relationships you invest in.
Yeah.
If all of that stuff is done through the lens of the flame,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be more successful.
Yeah.
Going to bring you more joy and more happiness. You as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, I guess, like wasting the opportunity to build in this mm-hmm. world. Because that's why we came here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe God sent us here to build. We're mm-hmm. supposed to come and use our hearts and use our minds and take the world
mm-hmm.
and just create more godly things out of it.
Yeah.
Right? And the flame is the root of that.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. for me, I say that we're here to create fruit.
Mm.
Fruit that continues to nourish people.
Over lifetimes, over generations.
Over lifetimes, over generations. Mm. When you think of like plants, you can plant a plant one season and it will come back every season after that for generations to come. So it's like being mindful of what you do to help others blossom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being part of an environment where everybody's fruit can grow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Wow, Olivia. This was lovely.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure to have you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to having you on again.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of you and everything
Thank
you've
you.
Accomplished.
Thank
as this
you so much.
Incredible force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You continue to inspire me.
Thank you. And you inspired me too.
Wow. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
This is Christoph Kasun, and you've been listening to Navigating Diversity. Join us next week at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday as we continue to explore how human beings differ, yet can find ways to relate to one another in an increasingly xenophobic socio-political climate. For more information on all episodes, visit kisu.org/programs/navigatingdiversity or find us on Facebook. Simply search the handle @diversityradio.